Hello, I'm Orla Smith. Welcome to the Science Translational Medicine podcast for September 7th, 2011. In this show, I will be speaking with Dr. Gerald Chun of the Scripps Research Institute about new therapeutic leads for treating hydrocephalus, a severe neurological disorder of newborns. Hydrocephalus, also known as water on the brain, is caused by accumulation of cerebrospinal fluid in the brain's ventricles during fetal development. The most common treatment is surgical insertion of an intraventricular shunt that drains excess fluid from the brain. But the surgery only relieves intracranial pressure and does not solve the root cause of the disorder. Bleeding into the brain during fetal development is known to trigger hydrocephalus, suggesting that factors in blood may somehow be the culprits that lead to accumulation of fluid in the brain. Now, Gerald Chun and his colleagues identify a lipid in blood called lysophosphatidic acid, or LPA, as a trigger of hydrocephalus. Here now is Dr. Chun on the line to tell us more. Welcome, Dr. Chun, and thanks for joining us.
Yes, it's a real pleasure, Orla.
So how big a problem is hydrocephalus? And is surgery the only solution?
So hydrocephalus turns out to be a quite enormous problem, representing one of the most, if not the most, common neurological disorder of newborns and young children. It's estimated that something on the order of 1 in 500 children may, in fact, experience hydrocephalus. Currently, the standard of care is surgical shunt placement. This requires a neurosurgical procedure to drain away the excess cerebrospinal fluid. There are currently no medical therapies, no disease-modifying therapies that are available to treat fetal hydrocephalus.
So tell us more about your animal model.
This model did not start off as an intended model for hydrocephalus. It was, in fact, a coalescence of different fields, information from the hydrocephalus field, of course, but also information from developmental cerebral cortical biology and the signaling mechanisms. These are the molecular mechanisms that allow information to go from the outside of the cell to the inside of the cell that involve the small fat molecules that you just mentioned, LPA or lysophosphatidic acid. And we were trying to understand the in vivo consequences of LPA exposure in the embryonic brain. And that led to the observation by a really talented graduate student, Yun Young, that in fact, when these brains were exposed to LPA, they produced with 100% penetrance, as 100% of the time, fetal hydrocephalus that manifested after birth. And so that led to the observation and then furthering the model that there was, in fact, a way to study this phenomenon in a biologically relevant way that could give us some insights into human fetal hydrocephalus.
So can you tell me how you actually made your model?
Right. So the approach, which has been used by many investigators for other types of studies, is to access embryos before birth. And while they're still alive, one can use a micropipette, a little needle, to inject various substances into the brains of embryos and then allow them to survive and be born. And so in this case, we use that approach to add LPA within the ventricles. That's this cerebral spinal fluid filled space within the brain. To add LPA there, allow these animals to be born. And that is, in fact, what produced the hydrocephalus phenotype.
And so when you tested LPA in your fetal mice, what did you find?
What we found was, of course, this robust response where the heads of the animals enlarged, their brains became compressed, and the space within the ventricles enlarged, characteristics of hydrocephalus. But what was quite remarkable and not predictable from our initial studies was a range of what we would call comorbid or other phenomena that happened at the same time as the hydrocephalus. And these included some histological changes, things that can be seen when you look under the microscope in the brain substance itself, things that are called neural rosettes. These are little circles of cells that are misplaced, some heterotopias. These are things, little cells that cluster to form balls that can be within the brain substance or within the ventricles themselves, an enlarging of the ventricles, and a variety of other phenomena that quite remarkably, have been observed in the human fetal hydrocephalus literature for many, many years, but have been a somewhat disparate collection that did not have any common or obvious common mechanism. Thus, LPA exposure actually accounts for these in a way that could potentially link them all to fetal hydrocephalus in humans.
So how does LPA work?
So one of the important experiments that was done in this particular study was to add LPA into the brains of animals that had been genetically modified to lack specific cell surface receptors for LPA. So in order for LPA to produce its responses, these receptors are normally required. And when we took those receptors away, it pretty much eliminated the fetal hydrocephalus and many of those comorbid changes. It didn't eliminate them completely. About 90% of the time it did so. The 10% that were unaffected could be explained by a range of related receptors, also LPA receptors, that we did not delete in that experiment. But the take-home message is that you must have both LPA and its cognate or recognizing receptor to produce fetal hydrocephalus.
So is there some drug that you could use to block LPA and its receptor?
Well, what's really exciting from a therapeutic standpoint is that the class of receptors, so-called G-protein coupled receptors, is in fact the most common class that is targeted by human medicines. And it's estimated that this family of targets accounts for anywhere on the order of some 40% of currently prescribed medicines. For example, things like some of the H3 blockers, things involved with acid production in the stomach, that's just one example. And thus, it's quite conceivable that one could target these receptors if you could develop a chemical tool, a, quote, drug aimed at inhibiting them that could have an impact on fetal hydrocephalus. And if so, this would provide a completely novel therapeutic pathway for attenuating or preventing fetal hydrocephalus.
And did you test this?
Indeed. We did what we would call a proof of concept study, and we used a so-called receptor antagonist, a receptor blocker that had been developed within industry. This one happens to be by Kirin Breweries, and they were kind enough to give us a sample. And when we added this drug to prevent the formation of the hydrocephalus, indeed, it could do so in a robust way, arguing and consistent with the genetic approaches where we simply removed the receptor and arguing that one can, in fact, prevent fetal hydrocephalus by using a chemical modulator, i.e. a drug. Now, it still leaves open the question of whether this compound or this approach can work in treatment, that is, once the hydrocephalus has started, and we're very interested in exploring that further.
What are the next steps to confirm that LPA and its receptor will be useful therapeutic targets?
Well, some of the most important steps towards more human validation is to look within actual human tissues, and so we have collaborations with wonderful clinicians who are going to be providing us with tissues and fluids to examine the LPA links in more detail. In addition, we need to understand more about the therapeutic potential of this approach, that is, instituting or producing a hydrocephalus type of phenotype and then trying to cure it, if you will, by adding compounds like this antagonist or perhaps some better compounds that are in the works to reduce the sequelae. And those types of experiments aimed at drawing the circle closed, looking at human samples, as well as developing better tools to assess it, will be the next major steps in these studies.
And could there be other factors in blood or perhaps even cerebrospinal fluid that trigger hydrocephalus?
I think that's a real possibility. What this particular class of lipids, these lysophospholipids, suggest to us is that perhaps there are other bioactive lipids present in blood, in cerebral spinal fluid, perhaps even produced locally that might contribute to fetal hydrocephalus. In that regard, it's interesting that a wide range of other types of disorders, including things like autism, schizophrenia, some forms of epilepsy, have been linked epidemiologically or clinically by prenatal blood exposure. And within those prenatal blood components, of course, exists not only LPA, but a whole range of other lipids that may contribute to some aspect of those diseases. So we're very keen about looking into the possibility that some other constituents, lipid constituents, are producing some of the changes seen in these diseases.
Dr. Chun, thank you so much for joining us today, and congratulations on a fascinating paper.
Well, it's our pleasure to speak with you, and we thank you for your time and interest.
That was Gerald Chun from the Scripps Research Institute in La Jolla, California. Check out his paper in the September 7th issue of Science Translational Medicine by going to our website at stm.sciencemag.org. I'm Orla Smith. Thanks for listening. This podcast is a production of Science Translational Medicine and the American Association for the Advancement of Science, working together to advance science and serve society.